Good afternoon. I'm Ernie Bauer, the Sumitro Chair for Southeast Asia Studies here at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, and we're fortunate today to have David Matheson, who's the Senior Researcher on Burma for Human Rights Watch, and David's visiting from Burma here in Washington. David, the peace negotiations between the central government and ethnic groups seem to be moving forward. What are the remaining challenges to implementing a national ceasefire?
I think there are a large number of challenges that remain, and there has to be, I think, a very sanguine observation of how much progress the peace process has made. Mm-hmm. And it's still at a very preliminary stage, even after 2 years of negotiations. And right now, over 15 non-state armed groups are negotiating with the government on a nationwide ceasefire agreement,
right,
the text of which has still not been agreed upon. So, and that has been dragged out over the past several months, which indicates to me that the process really has stalled, and that there is a lot of fear expressed on the government side, on the non-state armed group side, and importantly on the civil society side, that this process really has almost ground to a halt. Mm. And I think the factors involved are numerous and very, very complicated.
Is there a level of trust that at the beginning of those discussions that has been diminished, or do you think there was never any trust and we're sort of where we started?
Unfortunately, the trust that's been built up over the past couple of years has been nowhere near as much as what is needed to move the process forward. Right. I think there's trust between individuals on the government and the elites of the non-state armed groups, but that trust is constantly tested because there's negotiations that they can do with U Aung Myint, the chief negotiator, who does have a lot of respect amongst the non-state armed groups.
Right.
But unfortunately, that doesn't translate to the Burmese military, which is the real missing link in this entire process. Mm-hmm. And it's the military not coming forward to fully cooperate with the process that is causing a lot of unease and a lack of trust within the non-state armed groups and, crucially, the communities in these conflict zones.
The outlook for the Rohingya conflict doesn't look too positive, particularly since Doctors Without Borders, or Médecins Sans Frontières, have been told to halt operations in the Rohingya state. Well, what's the outlook on the ground there?
Unfortunately, the outlook looks incredibly grim. I think the decision to suspend the operations of MSF is reprehensible. I think the government will really regret its decision. I think MSF have done a brilliant job in the past 20 years keeping essentially hundreds of thousands of people alive through primary healthcare. It really is quite a deplorable act when you consider that there are more than 140,000 internally displaced and also 800,000 or so Rohingya living in northern Rakhine state in really quite deplorable conditions, and not being able to get the kind of basic social services that they deserve as human beings,
yeah,
and that the state actively denies them. So unfortunately, the outlook looks very bleak indeed.
So you don't expect them to be admitted back in anytime soon?
One would hope that the government sees reason and allows them back in, but unfortunately, the national level government is quite upset with the way this alleged incident in Mongdor Township in January has been reported and the role that MSF played in it. I personally think that MSF did the right thing by reporting the information that they had, that one of their clinics had treated people injured in an attack.
Right.
But this is a showdown between the state authorities that are very anti-Rohingya and anti-Muslim writ large, and the national level authorities who are trying to navigate these local hostilities and obstructions. And unfortunately, this frustration has been taken out on humanitarian agencies operating in Rakhine State, especially MSF, because of how tough they are.
A lot of discussion here in Washington on Myanmar, Burma, is about constitutional reform. How should people be thinking about that process here?
I think people need to look at constitutional reform. The first thing I would suggest is actually read the 2008 Constitution and realize just what massive challenges there are to make that a genuine rights-respecting document that applies to the entire country. And it wasn't written that way. It was written to preserve the powers of the Burmese military.
Right.
And right now, a lot of the discussion is really about Section 59F that will grant Aung San Suu Kyi the right to become president. It's a nasty, petty provision, and quite racist, actually, that bars her, because she has two children that have nationalities that are non-Burman, from becoming president. However, that's not the only provision, and I think people need to look further beyond that. Read section Chapter 8 of the Constitution, which has amazing reserve powers for the military. Immunity from prosecution, their ability to decide their own military budget, and also the emergency powers chapter at the end, and the fact that the Constitution preserves 25% of state, regional, and national level parliamentary seats for the military. So I think, and the fact that a lot of ethnic groups want to start discussing a more federal constitution that grants them more rights and control over their natural resources.
So a much broader discussion is taking place in Myanmar than I think maybe in Washington about these issues.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, in Rangoon and Mandalay and throughout the country, people are having very serious discussions about this document.
Right.
That is far more complicated than just Aung San Suu Kyi.
How will the 2015 presidential election impact the country's reform path, in your view?
Well, I mean, firstly, the 2015 elections will be parliamentary elections, because then the parliament actually chooses the president. It's very uncertain. I think the script that a lot of people in capitals around the world want to see is that Aung San Suu Kyi and the National League for Democracy will win the popular vote in a relatively free and fair election and assume power in 2016. Unfortunately, that scenario is looking less and less likely. It doesn't seem like the military will cooperate in amending the constitution. It also doesn't appear as if the NLD actually has the capacity to field enough candidates and has the ability to govern beyond 2015. There are a lot of genuine, I think, fears about the capacity of some of the opposition parties. Also, if you look at connected to the ceasefire and some of the events in Arakan State as well, I think ethnic political parties will do a lot better, certainly in the states, in the seven ethnic states, than most people really understand. I also don't
so
think
whoever
that
rules has to rule with a coalition, basically.
I think so. I think the parliament will look a lot messier in 2016 than it will look than it looks today.
Yeah.
I also don't think people should assume that Aung San Suu Kyi has the support of all the ethnic groups, given her failure to speak out on some of the abuses committed during the war in Kachin State. Right. I doubt she'll get a single vote in Kachin State.
Mm. You and your board just made a, I guess I would call it a historic visit to the country. You were in Yangon and Naypyidaw. What were your impressions, or what were their impressions, I should say, of the situation?
Well, it was quite a major undertaking to get 70 people from the board and some of our supporters to Burma. The logistics were quite difficult, and it was designed basically to expose the board to all the complications and contradictions that are the reform process in Burma today. And many of them are, well, most of our board members are very sophisticated, connected people, and they really had their eyes open during this process. And many of them came away, and as Ken Roth, our executive director, said, acknowledging that there had been progress in certain areas, certainly media freedoms and the ability to speak out, and even in some legislative reforms. However, there was clear evidence that the government was divided, that there was some people committed to the reform process and other members of the government less committed to the reform process. And so, we came away very thankful for the government and many people in civil society and in the diplomatic community for hosting us, and we appreciate that. But we also see that there are many challenges ahead that are far more complicated from a human rights angle and from a political and economic angle.
President Obama will visit the country this November for the East Asia Summit and the ASEAN Summit. If he invited you across the street to brief him, what would you tell him to expect?
I would certainly tell him to stay committed to supporting the reform process. And I think the U.S. has been a very strong supporter of the reform process, and I think the administration, and especially Derek Mitchell, the ambassador, should be really commended for that. I think Derek especially is a very key interlocutor in this reform process. He's done a great job.
Yeah.
However, I think you know, they would be, well, Derek especially, would be one of the first to say that there are definitely problems ahead. And to President Obama, I would say, stay committed, but be aware of some of these challenges. Don't, you know, manage your expectations, in other words, mm-hmm. that there appears to be a narrative in Washington that this is an unalloyed foreign policy success. But, you know, from the ground in Rangoon, it's less simplistic.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the complications are starting to actually be, shall we say, I think they're becoming a lot more complicated than they were certainly a year ago. And I think the potential for communal violence and anti-Muslim violence throughout the country, not just in Arakan State, but throughout the country, really does have the potential to rip the country apart and to really derail these reforms. So I would certainly say to US policymakers that they should be aware of all these problems. You know, anti-Muslim violence, a very stalled peace process, and, you know, coupled with immense humanitarian and development challenges throughout the country and a very weak bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also a chance to raise these issues, to really say, look, where are you guys going? You're actually headed for a bad fall if you don't do something. And the US would stand, you know, ready to support you. But you've got to start kind of moving the boat around quite dramatically, I think. I certainly don't think disengaging or kind of is really going to work. You've actually got to further engage and to find people within civil society and the government that you can work with and engage on a broad number of fronts. And I think that does include very preliminary, carefully calibrated and with full oversight of engagement with the Burmese military as the most important and the most abusive institution in the country.
Very thoughtful insights from an expert who is on the ground in Burma. Thank you, David Matheson.
Thank you very much.